Because seriously, when's the last time you were sober enough to wake up at 5:30 a.m. to listen live? Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. He's the smartest guy in the room. We'll let you decide which one we're talking about. Brady and Walker. Now. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Here we go. The Leafs, they play tonight on Long Island, taking on Metropolitan Division leading New York. And you got game one of the World Series, a game that you can catch on Sportsnet. And right here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, game one tonight. It's Madison Bumgarner against James Shields. It really feels like we've seen a lot of both of these pitchers this postseason.
Yeah. When's the last time, by the way, you think the Leafs have played in Long Island with the Islanders in a division leading position? I mean, even this early in.
I was going to say it would have had to happen by happenstance at some point, but maybe not.
They haven't won a division since 1987-88. So, and they won the Patrick division back then.
Boy, that's a good question.
Their three leading scorers were Pat LaFontaine, Brian Trotsche, and Mikko Mäkelä. So it's been a while. It was a little bit of time. 26 years.
It would have had to have been like the first week of the season in the early to mid 90s, honestly.
If that indeed happened, if they played the Islanders that early in the season.
Like now, the Islanders made the playoffs a couple of years ago, but I don't think it any point, unless they started 1-2-0, they certainly not when the Leafs went in there.
Now, the Leafs are no slouches. They're tremendous slouches. They haven't won a division since 99-2000 themselves. Like, a couple long playoff runs, but they came from second place in the Northeast or third place in the Northeast when they made those runs. So it's been a while. Two futile franchises. You know, we talk about the Oilers' futility and the Jets' futility, but aren't these really the two teams who have the most hungry fan bases? Winnipeg's only been back 4 years. I know people are getting upset there, but it's not even been a half decade.
Yes and no. It's tough. I mean, the Leafs haven't been. There's been no real reason to consider the Leafs really dangerous since they had Doug Gilmour on the team, and with the Islanders.
Well, I'd say Sundin. I'd say there were a cup threat.
I mean, sorry. Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah. The Sundin Conference Finals.
I knew that too.
Yes, of course. And it was a, yeah. And then with the Islanders, yeah. I mean, it's been, as soon as the dynasty fell off, and then they were a decent team when they took on, you know, when they upset the Pittsburgh Penguins.
But that was a plucky little upset. Yeah. They were an 87-point team in 84 games. That was when they were playing 84 games. And they beat the Capitals in that series where Hunter injured Turgeon. And then they beat the Penguins the next couple of weeks.
And like the Leafs, it shouldn't have been that long, right? Because you rebuild and you have eras, and then you screw up another era. And Mike Milbury had a lot to do with that, right? Because you turn the corner and you begin to have, all right, well, I mean, how many years did the Alexei Yashin deal set them back?
Yeah, 7 years out of the playoffs from 94-95 onward, and the Leafs obviously missed for 7 years until two springs ago. You know, the Oilers are on the edge of that. On the edge of being out for, they've been out for longer than 7 years now, haven't they?
Well, they made the Stanley Cup Final in 2006, and then nothing since.
Yeah, so we're talking this could be their ninth year out of the playoffs. Fun, but they won last night.
They did. It was a tremendous game, too. It's one of those things where you watch the first period and you think, well, maybe this will be 3-0 Tampa and they'll burn down Rexall Place in Edmonton and that'll be it. But it was a real solid game. And you knew it was coming at some point, but this was a desperate Oilers hockey club that had to find a way to win on home ice and had a lead on home ice all season. And then you had Tampa coming in, minus the services of their top defenseman in Victor Hedman. We saw Jonathan Drouin make his debut last night. Alex Killorn went down in the morning skate. This was a game Edmonton just needed to have, and they played really well. Yeah. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins wins it with 3 minutes to go.
And they shut down Steven Stamkos, no points. He was a minus one on the night in his 19 and a half minutes, kept him off the score sheet. That was big. Taylor Hall scored on a penalty shot in the first period. But yeah, the big goal from Nugent Hopkins, and they win in regulation. There's nothing fluky about that.
1-4-1 now are the Edmonton Oilers, so 3 points through six games. And there'll be a conversation today. We'll be joined by Eric Francis at 7:20. They're not as bad as the world has been making them out to be over the first couple of weeks of the season. But where is the light at the end of the tunnel? Nobody thinks this is a playoff team. We will discuss. Francis, don't forget, joins 7:20.
And they get to play some home games now. Washington there tomorrow night. Carolina, who is a bit sad sack right now.
So Carolina is the only winless team now.
Yeah. Montreal goes in Monday night. So there's a chance to load up some points at the very least at home. And they need to. Even if they're thinking about playing, as we call it, meaningful games in January, let's call it, they need to win some of these games.
5:38, Brady and Walker. The Houston Texans cannot get out of their own way on Monday Night Football. We'll give you those details next. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Everything you're talking about, they're talking about. Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And a diving catch for a touchdown. It was grabbed by Lance Moore with a left-handed delivery from wide receiver Antonio Brown.
5:42, Brady and Walker, good morning. On your Tuesday, the Pittsburgh Steelers moved to 4-3 with the win at home on Monday Night Football, something they're used to doing. It was 16 in a row that they've won on Monday Night Football at home.
I always remember that streak about 5 o'clock. Like, I hear somebody mention it the day they play on a Monday night, and I go, I still can't believe it's that long. I mean, they
it's a
have
long
been,
time.
Up until the last year and a half, they have been one of the more consistent franchises, but you figure enough times they put a good team against a good team, you're going to lose a couple of those games.
Well,
they don't.
I mean, we still, especially divisional games, right? It seems every time they play, say, Baltimore, it's a three-point game, and they've always seemed to come out on top, well, at least on Monday Night Football. We talk about 30-23, by the way, the Steelers get it done last night. We talk about Seattle's home record, and Denver actually has a better home record than Seattle over the last 20. The Pittsburgh Steelers in the modern era, I mean, I don't know exactly what that constitutes, but nobody has a better home record over the long term than the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, and I don't think this edition of the Pittsburgh Steelers, the 14 Steelers, are very good. They've still given up more points than they've scored.
Yeah,
they've
looked. The defense is not a division winner, Super Bowl contender type of D.
And yet in the AFC. Can they do enough to sneak in? They looked awful against Cleveland just 8 days ago. Awful in Cleveland, losing 31-10. They're the team that lost to Tampa at home, and we all said, how on earth did that happen? So they've had some real missteps along the way, and yet they went into Carolina on a Sunday night game, blitzed them, and this is probably the second best they've looked. Now, they've got tougher games coming up. They host the Colts. They host the Ravens the next 2 weeks. Those are two teams that are looking pretty good, but so I don't think we're going to end up with a 10-6 Pittsburgh wild card team or flirting with the AFC North title, but there's something. I even had to say that to point out that I don't think they're very good, because when you're 2-5, you know you're not good. When you're 4-3, they might be giving people pause for thought in the weaker conference that they might be around in December.
Put it this way: the Steelers are 4-3, and the Buffalo Bills are 4-3, and. Boy, on a neutral field, boy, you like the Bills' defense better, and you certainly like Pittsburgh better when they have the ball. Who has a better playoff opportunity here? Probably Pittsburgh.
And are they going to play tougher games? I mean, again, Buffalo's still got one left against Miami, two left against the Jets. They still have to go to Foxborough. That's a tough call. I don't think either division is notably better than the other one, put it that way. It's not like you're playing the NFC West. For either of these teams, it's a bit of a toss-up. And there's Miami at 3-3, who've beaten New England, who had a good win at Soldier Field last week.
They should have beaten the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, they've been in a couple games that they could make the argument. Certainly, they could be better than 3-3. They did lose that tight one, yet they were embarrassing at home against Kansas City and in Buffalo. So basically, this is like last year's AFC, Andrew. You got about 10 teams, and there's 6 spots, and you're only really sure. I'm only really sure Denver's going to be in the AFC title game. Even San Diego. Why can't San Diego lose to Indianapolis?
Yeah. And as much
why can't New England go in and beat San Diego? I don't think they can this year, but maybe they can.
As much as I sat here and lauded Peyton Manning and called him the best ever last night, you can't deny that Denver and Peyton Manning, is it beyond the realm of possibility? They sit there and in comes Bengals, Steelers, Ravens team and knocks off Manning and the Broncos. It happens,
yeah,
and it has
it
happened.
It feels harder to see than 2 years ago with Baltimore, even though that was probably a 9.5, 10-point spread, and nobody thought the Ravens would hang in there, let alone win in overtime. But even last year at this time, we both said, looks like Denver and New England on a collision course.
Yeah.
Well, now it's Denver and one of maybe three teams that are on that collision course.
I know Bill O'Brien last night was steaming post-game, as he should have been. I mean, when the dust settles from this Monday nighter, there you have Pittsburgh with a 7-point victory. And the whole game, when you think of the fact that they lost by seven, Houston couldn't get out of their own way.
Yeah,
Houston
that.
Got out to a 13-0 lead. They were looking great. And somehow they give up three touchdowns in the final 87 seconds of the first half. You are never, ever winning a game when you do that. And then late in the fourth, it's still somehow a one-possession game. And after a long completion, the Texans fumble again.
Yeah, exactly. At the very end, the biggest problem was not just all... Well, it wasn't just giving up all those points at the end of the Steelers. It was getting nothing in the third. Now, Pittsburgh didn't score in the third either. You had that rare scoreless quarter. But the Texans really needed to respond to get it back from 24-13 and didn't. So, you know, full credit to Pittsburgh for the win. But let's not start, you know, making playoff travel plans yet if you're a Steelers fan thinking you're going to go to Foxborough or you're going to go to San Diego. It's way too early for that.
Ryan Fabro's in with the Now and Then coming up in a couple of minutes. One other NFL note, and we will explore it a little deeper in the six-pack coming up after six. But the Buffalo Bills, we knew that they're 4-3, and we knew that the injury to running back C.J. Spiller was bad, surgery on a broken collarbone, likely out for the year. And if he's not, how effective is he going to be? Now, the other one was a little bit more up in the air, and that's Fred Jackson. Said he's out 4 weeks with a groin injury. So if you are the Buffalo Bills, are running backs that quote-unquote replaceable that you'll just say Anthony Dixon, Bryce Brown, who hasn't really played, Dixon looked okay on Sunday, we're going to roll you guys out and just take our chances?
Well, and it matters who your backup is. I mean, I've famously talked about, and you'd remember it well, how James Starks came in that season for the Packers. He's still running actually quite well for the Packers. A guy, you know, out of University of Buffalo.
Yeah, he's their change of pace guy.
Who comes in and, you know, unbeknownst to anybody is good enough that he's stepping in for guys that are a bit better than him on the depth chart. Ryan Grant was the guy that year who was injured. They lost a couple other running backs as well. It depends who it is, isn't it? And Fred Jackson's almost 34 years old.
Well,
and that's
it's Anthony Dixon and Bryce Brown.
Yeah, I know. And if everything else is good enough to get you into the playoffs, but your running game isn't, that seems to be you wouldn't want that to hold you up and keep you out, put it that way. And you'd be combing the waiver wire. Trades are almost impossible to make. The Percy Harvin thing last Friday night's a real exception to the rule. And the Seahawks, as we find out, were ready to give him away. They got a 6th-round conditional pick.
See, and if I'm Buffalo, yes, you don't want to lose Spiller. You don't want to lose Jackson. It's not ideal, of course. But I think it's a great example, and we'll see on Sunday, and it's a great testament to running backs, man. Dime a dozen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right now, let's say Ray Rice was coming back from, I don't know, bereavement leave. Let's say that nothing had gone on legally for the guy. I doubt it's still even an upgrade over the guy that's been there all year and knows the playbook, et cetera, et cetera. I would still go with Anthony Dixon rather than go out and get somebody else.
I always think of that summer of the summer of 12, and Maurice Jones-Drew holds out from Jacksonville, and he had, what do you have, 1,600 yards. He led the NFL in rushing the year before, and they looked at him. They said, "We're 4-12. What? We're 4-12, and you led the league in rushing. Why would we pay you? Come back to camp." And he just kind of slunk in one day and came back to camp.
Kind of did.
He got no extra money.
5:50, Ryan Fabro is then. It is Today in History. Let's look at Now and Then.
Now and Then. A hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history. I'll be
back in time. Now, fantasy football. Seriously, different story with running backs, right? They still get drafted first. Probably what the first 6-7 picks are running backs. They're always of high value. When in Tomlinson's prime, Sean Alexander, right, Marshall Faulk, guys like that.
It's been part of the culture of overrating running backs, to be quite honest.
Yeah. You had a bad experience with Doug Martin last year, Favreau.
Oh, very ugly. And LeSean McCoy this year, I drafted him first overall.
Shady. Sure. Well,
but part of the thing is when you're at the top of a fantasy draft, it's like you kind of draft the top running backs because generally most teams are splitting carries now, right? So I picked McCoy or somebody would have picked Peterson because that's the guy. I don't have to worry about it. He's going to play all three downs. And
the most
and
valuable.
Then look what happened. That didn't even the guys you thought were dependable, you know.
Like wouldn't DeMarco Murray be almost the most obvious number one overall pick in every fantasy draft next year?
Right.
Based on this season.
Based on the O-line.
300 more yards than anybody else.
What also makes running backs so valuable in fantasy football is that you get, it's dual because you can catch passes too. That's what makes the Jamal Charles and LeSean McCoys and the Matt Fortes of the world just super studs.
Well, we'll see about the Bills. I believe they're at the Jets this weekend. Is that correct?
Correct.
So nobody can run the ball on the Jets really this year, so I don't think we should make too much of it. If Dixon struggles or Brown, like nobody's been running on the Jets, so Orton's going to have to play a game.
Anthony,
it's actually fascinating.
Anthony Dixon Nation. Here we go.
That's not a thing.
There's no Dixon Nation. I've never heard of it.
No.
No Wikipedia page for it.
Heard of the Mason Dixon line?
That's it.
Mason Dixon, he was Anthony Tarver in the final Rocky movie. There you go.
That's not bad.
Okay, that's enough Dixon talk. October the 21st, 1973, Fred Dreyer of the Rams was the first player ever to score two safeties in one game, and later he played Hunter on TV. It's a good song.
You don't see the ex-athlete become a television star as much. Ex-NFLer, you had O.J. Simpson, Rocky Blyer was in a movie, Fred Dreyer.
Yeah.
Merlin Olsen, right, was on Little House on the Prairie.
I didn't know.
Mind demo. Know your demo.
Yeah. Craig Ironhead Hayward did some shampoo commercials.
He did do that, yeah.
I forgot.
But it's very, you're not going to...
That's true.
Well, you're not going to see LeSean McCoy starring as, you know...
Well, he keeps playing
part
like
of
he
a
is
buddy
this
cop
year.
Team or something like that.
1980 on this date, the Phillies win their first ever World Series. They beat the Royals. Who was involved with this Philadelphia team?
1980, you said?
Carlton,
P. Rose. Tug McGraw was the late Tug McGraw was the reliever. Mike Schmidt.
Forgive me, but is he a Tim McGraw's father?
Yeah,
you're forgiven.
You might have known that. Maybe.
I don't know who else is.
I was angry at that. I wanted the Royals to win that pretty badly.
It's good. Forgive me,
Royals.
1999.
You can't keep it on track now.
The number one movie in 99 is Fight Club.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it was a solid one of the best endings of all time, maybe. Little.
Why is it when I think craziness? Of that, I think about Meatloaf's character in that.
Oh.
And he had the...
Robert Palmer. Robert Palmer?
He used the phrase...
His name Robert Palmer? That's the guy who sings...
Yeah,
the late Robert love. Palmer. Was his name Robert Palmer?
It was... Remember they're chanting? His name was...
But I thought
it's not Robert Palmer.
Simply Irresistible. That's the guy who sings...
His nickname was Bitch Tits.
Yeah, yes.
I always felt bad for him because of that.
Yeah.
Because he had... Large, right. He had like gynecomasty or whatever that is.
Okay. Birthday
Royals.
Times.
Robert Paulson.
Sorry.
Sammy Paulson. Bob Paulson. Got it.
Jim Palmer. Robert Palmer.
That's not true.
What are we doing?
Robert Palmer's
okay, quick birthdays. George Bell. He was a good J. How old Walker today?
54.
51.
55, correct
answer. Oh.
And let's wrap up with adult film star Kim Kardashian.
Her birthday today?
She does more than
that. 36?
Not that old.
No?
32.
34, split the difference.
God, when was she with Reggie Bush? When she was 20?
I don't know.
Don't care.
Don't, yeah, that's correct. And the number one hit from 1985.
Your girlfriend loves the Kardashians.
Yes, she does.
Whitney Houston with Saving All My Love For You.
Ah, yes.
The only my girlfriend doesn't really like sports, so I was able to take her to a Raptors game last year, but only if they were playing the crappy Celtics because Chris Humphries was in the lineup, and he used to be married to Kim. That's what constitutes...
If he still had his own show, would she watch the Chris Humphries show?
No, she hates him. She booed him the whole game.
So you'll have to take her to the Wizards games this year.
Why? Yeah. Who plays the Wizards?
Chris Humphries.
Oh, who knew? Well, 5:56, Brady and Walker. Game one of the World Series you can catch right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What do we expect? We'll tell you next. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So I'm saving all
my love for you. This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The World Series starts up tonight in KC.
Hollins delivery. Ground ball down to third. Fair ball. Moustakas. There it is. The Kansas City Royals have won the American League pennant.
And the 2-0 and a swing and a ball. Hit deep to right field. And it is gone. Travis Ishikawa has just launched the Giants into the World Series.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
6:03, Brady and Walker, game one of the World Series. Kansas City hosting the Fall Classic for the first time in 29 years. They get the Giants. Game one, you can catch it right here at Sportsnet 590, The Fan, beginning at 8. Pre-game show at 7 with Wilner. He'll be joined by Jose Bautista at 7:30. So, Greg, this matchup is not best versus best, what we saw in the regular season or what we expected. Is it still as equally fascinating?
I think you got the old school Kansas City Royals, only in the sense that they're playing smaller ball against the, and they're very inexperienced. James Shields has gone to the playoffs, obviously, as part of the Rays before. But I was looking this up last night. Buster Posey's played 41 playoff games. And obviously, the Royals have nobody who's you know, a lot of debuts tonight. But that Buster Posey still looks like a kid. You think he couldn't have played that many games, and he went through the shattered leg injury, even as it was. Shows you what kind of experience the Giants have. And despite the record, I'm sure the Giants are the pick for a lot of people. It feels like it would be an upset if the Royals were to win the series. We got Bumgarner Shields tonight. Tomorrow's Jake Peavy, Yordano Ventura. The Royals are being a little coy as to who's going out the third night. It's probably Jeremy Guthrie against Tim Hudson. You get two old dudes out there on Friday night at AT&T Park. But Andrew, I think these series take a little bit of time to get into. I always feel the Stanley Cup Final takes that when it's a 3 or 4 day break, and this will be the same. But I'll be watching tonight. Games on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan as well.
Yeah, it's been interesting for me charting my interest in the Major League Baseball postseason, because I think we can all fall victim to this. We love baseball. We're baseball fans. But after 162 games of the Blue Jays and the ups and the downs, and they fall just short, if not substantially short, in the months of September, you might get baseballed out a little bit. And then the playoffs have admittedly been terrific. I mean, there's been drama everywhere. Yeah. Kansas City has been a great story, and Clayton Kershaw gets knocked out twice, and St. Louis and San Fran go back, you know, back and forth. But it was always kind of, I don't know, third option for me, right? If there was an NFL game or if the Leafs played or something like that. But all of a sudden, this is a pretty big priority tonight. I'm really fascinated to see if these plucky Royals have a chance against a team that just looks incredibly calm and collected.
Well, and if anything, the Royals haven't given you much much room for drama. 7 of the last 10 World Series have either been sweeps or in 5 games. It's hard to see this one ending super fast, but we'd have said that about Royals Orioles, right? We would have said that about Kansas City playing the LA Angels, right? Team with the best record. They ran away with the best record in the American League ahead of the 96
Kansas City hasn't lost
Orioles.
Yet. Kansas right. City has lost a game. Right. They don't know what it feels like.
No. So these series can get, you can always look and say, great matchup. It's a great matchup with, even when Boston got in 04, that's when I mentioned the charting. 7 of the last 10 series have been sweeps or 5 games. When Boston got in against St. Louis, and you thought, God, are the Red Sox going to have anything left in the tank after coming back from 3-0 down on on the Yankees, and not only did they swept. So we've seen that. We saw it 2 years ago with San Fran and Detroit. It felt like it was over before it started.
Now, smart money. Smart money has to go on the Giants, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's just...
Even though they're not at home.
Even though they're not at home, and even though Kansas City hasn't lost in this postseason. Now, nobody in Kansas City will tell you that, right? They'll just feel that they're the team of destiny right now.
And that winning one game in San Francisco tonight or tomorrow, and you'd be inclined to say the way Bumgarner's pitching that you can't save your bullets for games. It doesn't work that way, but that they're better options tomorrow night. They have to hope Ventura is fantastic. I almost wonder if they'd have considered going with the kid in the opening night and making sure you got James Shields for game two. He can still pitch game six if you need him to on 4 days rest, but you have Shields going against Petey.
But he could go, James Shields could go out of the bullpen in game seven if they needed.
Yeah.
Right?
But there's every opportunity that Bumgarner's just going to be unbelievable again. Hasn't allowed a postseason run away from home now in 26 and two-thirds innings. That dates back to 2010. That's a current streak. So it's a question of I'm not sure the Royals have faced a guy as dialed in. Nobody on Baltimore and really nobody on the Angels. Jared Weaver had a good run going into the playoffs. Nobody's as dialed in as Bumgarner is for the Royals bats tonight to face.
We've got the game right here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario tonight. We are about 14 hours away from first pitch, just after 8. Mike Wilner has your pregame show at 7. And yes, Jose Bautista joins him at 7:30, taking some of your phone calls as well. 609, Brady and Walker, let's get you what you need to know.
This is your Tuesday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
All right, so number six, this just coming down as we got into work this morning, because of that time difference, obviously. Oscar Pistorius, the double amputee South African Olympian, was sentenced this morning to 5 years in prison, Greg, for killing girlfriend Reva Steenkamp by a South African judge who cited the gross negligence he showed when he shot her multiple times through a toilet cubicle door in his home. And, of course, this whole event, he had cited, you know, he thought there was a home invasion.
Yeah, I don't know where it's going to go for Pistorius. You forget, obviously, rose to prominence as a Paralympian in 2012. He competed at the Olympics. This wasn't an older man. And I say that because had Pistorius been completely and utterly acquitted, what would have happened for him? This wasn't O.J. Simpson, okay? This wasn't the belief among many that this was some, you know, killing of rage or premeditation. So would he have kept doing public appearances? Would he have even kept running? Nobody knows for sure. But his athletic career probably ends this morning with a 5-year jail sentence. He'll be 33 when he gets out, assuming he doesn't get earlier for good behavior.
Well, much like it happened with Ray Rice and Tiger Woods, and to varying degrees, there's Adrian Peterson in there as well. Pistorius very, very quickly a long time ago lost all of his endorsement deals.
Yeah.
Those went out the window in a heartbeat.
I just wonder how he could, if acquitted, if he'd been completely and utterly acquitted, could he have worked back his way to the court of public opinion? And we're all in on what Ray Rice did was terrible. This man murdered somebody, either accidentally and maybe not by the letter of the law, but he took a life. Didn't punch anyone in the face. Not condoning that. But he took a life instead of punching someone in the face.
Number five, the Buffalo Bills running game now needs a makeover, or does it? So here's what we learned yesterday. C.J. Spiller is likely done for the season. He had surgery on his broken collarbone. And Fred Jackson, maybe worse than we initially thought. He says he's out 4 weeks with a groin injury. So at 4-3 with a playoff spot, a possibility, that leaves Anthony Dixon and Bryce Brown as the tandem in the backfield. Do the Bills have any other choice other than just got to go ahead and see how they do?
Bryce Brown's not a nobody. They traded for him at the draft. They traded a mid-round pick in the draft to get him. And he was a healthy inactive for the first 7 games. But he's got to get in there, learn the game plan, pick things up. He was drafted by the Eagles late in the 7th round. But he was a very highly sought-after high school recruit. Was supposed to play for Lane Kiffin in Tennessee. He left to go to USC. He transferred to Kansas State. I don't know what kind of running back Brown's going to be, but I know they think he's pretty good. They're not giving it some 31-year-old has-been. This is a fresh start for Brown. We'll see how many times he gets the ball in the Meadowlands. Jets are their opponent on Sunday.
Number four NFL Monday night, or the Pittsburgh Steelers get it done 30-23 over Houston. You could make the argument the Texans gave this ball game away. The Steelers scored three touchdowns in the final minute 27, believe it or not, of the end of the second quarter. Now, they've gone win one, lose one all season. With that in mind, with a tricky conference and an even trickier division, are the Pittsburgh Steelers the hardest team to figure out in football?
They're a very difficult team to read right now as to who they are and what they can accomplish. They've got an extra home game to play. They're 2-2 on the road, 2-1 at home, and they sit there same record as Buffalo. You know, just one game behind San Diego. I don't think we think they're in San Diego or Indianapolis's class, but the record shows they're a game out, and a big one next week at home against Indianapolis. We'll start to believe the Steelers are for real if they can take out Andrew Luck and the Colts next week.
Number three, 10 games in the NHL tonight, including the Toronto Maple Leafs set to hit the road. They take on the Islanders tonight. New York, great start to their season. They're 4-1, leading the way in the Metropolitan. More on the Leafs at 6:42, as the conversation is kind of shifting to what do you have up the middle and who among these Leafs centermen can actually play defense. Number two, the Edmonton Oilers, huge weight off their shoulders. It was a standalone game in the NHL, so all the eyeballs were on Edmonton last night. The Oilers do come through. They look pretty good in a 3-2 win over Tampa Bay. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins with the game winner. That was a city that needed a win in the worst way.
Well, and folks, just sitting down last night, Brian Boyle scores his first goal as a Lightning on the second shot that Ben Scrivens faced, and people are going, here we go again. But quick goal from Justin Schultz just after. Taylor Hall gets that penalty shot goal. We just played it near the end of the period, and they do end up escaping with a 3-2 win. Winnable games the next two coming up, including Carolina, so maybe they can put a little bit of a run together. I still think they're going to finish ahead of the Calgary Flames. There's all this Battle of Alberta stuff going on. I mean, we're not confusing the Flames with playoff contenders just because they're 4-3 out of the gate. I still think Edmonton finishes with more points.
Eric Francis joins us to answer that question at 7:20 this morning. And the number one thing you need to know, it's game one of the World Series. Two left standing, Kansas City, San Francisco, Bumgarner against James Shields. And game one tonight right here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Beginning at 8, Mike Will in the pregame show at 7. Jose Bautista joins him at 7:30. We want to send you to the ACC coming up this Saturday as Toronto takes on the Boston Bruins, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino. As we always ask you to do, we want you to name this player. We'll give you clues throughout the morning, 7:14 and 8:14, clues 2 and 3. Here is your first clue. This player was very productive in his time with Toronto. 5 full seasons, scored 20-plus goals in 4 of them. Your next clue, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino, coming up at 7:14.
Jonah Carey next from Grandland at 6:22 to preview the World Series match and tell us if there are any MLB managers on the hot seat. He'll do that as well, and we'll get into Slavovoynov. The NHL handles a domestic dispute yesterday. An alleged domestic violence incident. Probably the only way it could have. We'll tell you what may come next at 6:30.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Always the best sports talk on Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
They're a good team. We're a good team. You know, you don't get to this point without, you know, being a good team. So, you know, you just got to go out there and execute, you know, see what happens.
An excellent point for Madison Bumgarner. Game one of the World Series tonight. Giants and Royals, we've got it for you right here at 8 p.m. Pregame show at 7 with Mike Wilner. It is Brady and Walker at 6:23. Slavovoynov of the L.A. Kings, the latest athlete, the first NHLer in recent memory, to be cited for domestic abuse or a scenario where
the
NHL has to rule. More on that coming up at 6:30 this morning.
Yeah, I'd say that. Not to clarify, but I'd say where the league steps in, they did not last year with Semyon Varlamov, who even dressed and started the night after He was investigated for a domestic dispute.
I mean, and the National Hockey League, as we all know, kind of got a free pass with that one because Varlamov, at the end of the day, was acquitted of everything.
Yeah. It's kind of fascinating, and yet I thought people were way too over-analytical about what the NHL did or what they should do going forward. We'll talk more about it in about 7-8 minutes. But, yes, joining us now, you hear him on Primetime Sports. We've got him this morning. Also the author of Up, Up, and Away, the story of the Montreal Expos, which is available on hardcover. Of course, you can download it as well. Jonah Carey, best-selling author, MLB writer for Granlund.com. Now, you tell us, rest versus rust doesn't really factor in here. Would you be a believer in it anyway had the Giants got extended out further than the five games by the Cardinals, or if the Royals had even been so by Baltimore? Both these teams probably as fresh as each other.
I don't think so. And here's the thing. It's not 9 days in this case. It's 4 or 5 for these two teams. And that actually works out perfectly because it allows them to set the rotation. I think the biggest issue really is that, you know, if you're playing the next day after you win, then you have to go with, you know, potentially your number three or number four guy. And that's a real disadvantage. Here, the Giants and the Royals are going to get to throw out Bumgarner and Shields in game 1 and 5. And if it goes to game 7, they could use either one out of the bullpen, which is a big weapon. So, you know, and even back in the day, we would have said, oh, gosh, if it's, you know, a Roger Clemens type or even further back a Sandy Koufax type, then they could start 3 times in the 7-game series. So, you know, either way, I think it's one of those situations where that's the only thing I see being a factor. And heck, I mean, it's possible there's some guys, maybe not to the same extent as like football, but there's probably some guys with some bumps and bruises too. Gives them a little extra healing time. So I really don't see any negatives, and I think there could be some positives.
Jonah Carey, our guest on Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. One thing we've talked about quite a bit, I think, in the last couple of weeks is the way the Kansas City Royals play the game. And I don't know if baseball is a copycat league, say like the NFL or the NHL is, but is there something to be said the way they've kind of bucked the trend a little bit with this small ball? Are we going to see an element of maybe copycat going forward?
Well, the thing is that I think there's a little bit of a misperception to some extent about the way that the Royals play ball. It's certainly true that they steal a lot of bases. They're number one in Major League Baseball on stolen bases, and they do a good job of running first to third, second to home, and all that. But the bunting thing, that was kind of a concoction of a few playoff games. During the regular season, they were middle of the pack. They didn't bunt all that much during the regular season, so that's not really in play. They really do a good job of contact hitting is what they do. They were last in the majors and strikeouts, meaning they had the best contact rate. And that's sort of reminiscent of the 2002 Angels, if anything, who were a team that played, you know, in the middle of a high offense era. They just hit a lot of singles and doubles. They hit some home runs, of course, but singles and doubles really played into it. And that's a good thing, you know. I mean, I think if you could put the ball in play, you have a chance to impact what could happen, obviously. It's, you know, potentially better than a strikeout, acknowledging that there's risks of double play. So there's that. And, you know, they have good pitching. They have a great bullpen. And they have a pretty good starting rotation. I don't think that's all that innovative. Everybody wants pitching. So, you know, to me, I look at it and I say, okay, you could argue about the copycats, but let's not forget the Royals finished last in the majors this year in home runs and last in the majors this year in hitter walks.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to emulate that. That's bad.
I know.
It's kind of remarkable that they are where they are.
Well, I mean, yes, last in home runs is incredible. And they've obviously hit some more in the postseason, but we look at a team like the Blue Jays here, and it would be unfathomable to consider, you know, this team having any chance at winning if they were, I don't know, in the bottom 5 of home runs, let alone last.
Well, sure, and I think, you know, part of it comes down to just the makeup of your roster. You're not going to get rid of Bautista and Encarnacion. They're fabulous players. If it happens that your best players also strike out 150 times, you're not going to say, well, let's get rid of these guys and let's go get a bunch of Gerard Dyson who strike out 20 times but hit 220 and have no power. Obviously, that's not a good trade-off. In a perfect world, you want, I don't know, a Vladimir Guerrero type, you know, somebody who hits 40 home runs but also doesn't strike out, a Joe DiMaggio type, I guess. But that's really, really hard to find. Those are generational players. Pujols in his prime was another guy like that, too. So you sort of take what you take. I mean, I know that people want to say, oh, the Blue Jays strike out too much and they rely on the 3-run homer. Yeah, but you don't want to get rid of your 2 best players either. So you kind of are where you are. And, you know, I think in a perfect world, maybe you try to surround those guys with 7 other players who are a little bit more contact-oriented, maybe 10, 15 home run guys with some doubles and fewer strikeouts. But again, you can't have everything. You can sort of try to, you know, maneuver your roster however you want, but there's only so many available players, and sometimes you just sort of end up where you end up.
Yeah, you nailed it, because Jonah Carey from Granlund, we were all gushing collectively about the collective power of the Baltimore Orioles, who had almost 40 more home runs than the Blue Jays, and then poof, a week later, that's the randomness of of the postseason. I bristled a little bit. I love when you write big picture about franchises, where they're going, the trends. I bristled a little bit about some of the romanticism about David Glass and the Royals. Can you kind of, I mean, it was a little, they laid it on a little thick at home, because fans were on the verge of walking out. Still, I'd say not all of them have come back. They're 25th in major league attendance this year. Is this a guy that just finally, you know, instead of sticking revenue sharing money in his back pocket, put it out there and now has had some success? I don't know that there's a model. There's no blueprint to follow David Glass's ownership.
No, I don't think so. You know, I think it comes down to they had years of high draft picks and they developed well and they finally got some good players in the majors and they made some good deals. You know, I was critical of the deal that got them James Shields and Wade Davis, but of course it's worked out great. They developed guys like Danny Duffy and Ventura, not to mention all those position players. And, you know, that is a tribute to the personnel that they have in the front office and the scouts and the minor league coaches and so forth. I will say that Glass has improved, not so much in major league payroll, but they are spending more on international, and they're willing to spend on the draft. You know, if there's a guy that costs a couple bucks, then they'll go do it, and so that works out fine. But I'm not, you know, that's as far as I'm willing to go. There's a whole separate conversation to be had about Walmart's practices, but anyway. You know, the bottom line is I think that you credit the people that David Glass hired, not so much Glass himself.
Can you talk about, there's a lot of talk right now that the Boston Red Sox might be making Yoenis Cespedes available for trade this winter. Mm-hmm. What is that going to look like?
Well, I don't know that it would be all that exciting because he's only under contract for one more season. So, you know, you could have, I mean, unless it's somebody who's a generational player, if Mike Trout was in his walk year or Clayton Kershaw was in their walk year, it would be a feeding frenzy. You know, whether or not they could re-sign the guy, having 1 year of Clayton Kershaw could win you the pennant. Cespedes is a good player. He's not that good. So I think it could be the type of situation where it'll help a team. But when you're talking about who you'd get back, you know, I look at it as, you know, kind of similar to Lester, right? Lester was a free agent to be, and he got, well, Cespedes in return. So I think that you, if you turn that around, you would get a pretty good pitcher, a pretty good hitter, or maybe a B-plus, A-minus type of prospect, but you wouldn't get, you know, a Buxton or Sano from Minnesota, a guy like that. I don't think that somebody like that is going to get traded for Cespedes. But the Red Sox right now have about seven starting outfielders, and they got to sort that all out. And if they feel this is the best way to do it, as opposed to trying to trade, I don't know, Daniel Nava, who's not going to get you anything, then okay, I guess that makes some sense.
Jonah, thanks so much for this. Enjoy the series, and we'll be reading.
Thank you, fellas.
There's Jonah Carey joining us, 6:31 on Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So it's Bumgarner Shields tonight. That's asking a lot of James Shields. Tomorrow, does the door open a little bit with Jake Peavy, who's had some off and on playoff performances the last couple of years? He'll go against the kid. You know what? All this was going to be pinned on in the wild card game. Yordano Ventura came
That's
in,
right.
And people
yeah.
said,
the three-run wow. bomb.
Yeah, his third or fourth pitch sailed over the center field fence at Kauffman Stadium, and it looked like Oakland was well on their way. I'm glad you said that, and I'm glad he corroborated what you said about the blueprint. There's no Royals blueprint. This is nice. They have some nice players, but this doesn't make the way, hey, do what the Royals do, and stay away from trying to make that big leap up like Detroit did with Price or Oakland did with Lester. I'm still of the mind that Oakland's not there without Lester, and they were a sinking ship when they traded for him, and Detroit barely finished ahead of Kansas City with David Price giving them some good starts down the stretch. They didn't count on the Anibal Sanchez injury, so they needed Price, as it turned out.
Game 1, 8 p.m. tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 7 o'clock. Pre-game show, 6:32, Brady and Walker. So I don't know if we can call this inevitable or if you could see it coming, but it was the day that a lot of hockey fans feared, and that was the one where the NHL joined the club in this whole domestic violence issue. The NHL has suspended LA Kings defenseman, two-time cup winner, Slava Voynov, Greg, indefinitely, after his arrest on suspicion of domestic violence yesterday. Now, because the NHL was able to sit back and watch what worked and what didn't work as the NFL handled this Ray Rice situation, the decision yesterday to move quickly was very easy.
It was an easy one. We'll still argue about whether it's in every walk of life and in every job, if you're accused of such a thing, should you be suspended from your job? I'm more inclined to think if you're in the least bit in the public eye, you have to be. You have to be at this point in time. Last year, Semyon Varlamov surrendered to Denver police. He was arrested for second-degree kidnapping and third-degree assault. He was later charged with a misdemeanor assault 3 or 4 weeks later, and that charge was dropped about a month later. So he wasn't cleared until December 20th. The only thing here, Andrew, is it's asking a lot of, and it's still the right thing to do. What if Voinov's name is cleared, but it takes him 9 weeks? 9 weeks of time he sits out. He's put himself in this predicament one way or the other.
It hurts the Kings. He's still getting paid his full freight.
Yeah. But reputation-wise, it's got a notable impact as well. And there may very well be a victim here. What we know about this case, unlike the Varlamov cases, Voinov was arrested at the hospital. He accompanied what we all assume to be his girlfriend to the hospital, and she was being treated for injuries there, and they arrested Voinov there and just put two and two together.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different than the Varlamov situation.
Or a videotape from an elevator.
Very true. Yes. Yeah, I doubt we'll have that in the Slava Voinov case, but the Kings will have to move on without him. There was no other call for the NHL to make. It's a bit of a layup. Now, if they get more evidence and start to think these charges are a little funky, and I don't know that they will, does Voinov play sooner than we think? Don't know.
At 6:35, Brady and Walker coming up at 6:48 this morning. Now, a San Francisco radio station has banned a song that we banned on our show over a year ago. We'll tell you what it is.
And it's not even on my iPod. You should be very proud of me.
I am actually surprised at that.
Don't be.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. And we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Keep it here for more Brady and Walker. Only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Me and JT always have some battles, so he's a heck of a hockey player, and he definitely is a person that leads by example, so... He's the heart and soul of their team. We're definitely going to try to shut him down.
6:43, Brady and Walker. Is it time for Randy Carlyle to start matching lines a little differently? Leafs on Long Island tonight taking on John Tavares and the Metropolitan-leading New York Islanders. Greg, the third line of the Leafs, centered by Mike Santarelli. They might not score you a ton of goals, but are they proving to be probably the most capable line on the defensive side of the puck if you need to shut somebody down?
This is the problem, I think, with the Maple Leafs. They won the one regulation game in six. And they've got the other win was an overtime against Colorado a week ago tonight. John Tavares, last game out, played 24 minutes against Pittsburgh. He played almost 26 against San Jose. That game went to overtime. I'm of two minds. One is, yes, it sounds like the idea of Santarelli along with Clarkson and Komarov is meant to be a checking line. But is a Santarelli line going to play 24, 25 minutes a night at the expense of scoring chances? You're going to get Bozak and Kessel and Van Riemsdyk.
Well, no, but nobody plays 25 minutes a night 5-on-5, right? That's not going to happen.
No, I know that. And at the same time, but you're doing 17, 18 minutes potentially. It all depends on the flow of the game and how much fun. Some games have a lot more 5-on-5 play than otherwise. I'd still look and say maybe that's the way to go. At this point early on, it still feels like you're not given a lot of time to the first line, but the problem is, or the second line, people are looking at Bozak and they're looking at Kadri, and maybe the realization is finally hitting home that neither guy's a great checker. Neither guy matches up terribly well against number one center. And you've said before, hey, if you put Kadri on the number one line, you're a worse line. I've said that what a lot of people have said, I feel like Kessel and JVR carry Bozak to some extent. He finished his chances last year. Neither guy's ideal. Neither guy's ideal on a contending team for a number one center. And a lot of us were screaming this 7 months ago that if you're ever going to go anywhere with this franchise, instead of just being a bubble team, instead of being in mediocrity, at some point over the last 7 years, you get a comparable replacement for what Matt Sundin was for 13 years. And they haven't found it. I'm not saying they grow on trees, but other teams have found them.
Yeah, they don't grow on trees. And other teams have found them. But you would also have to admit that sitting there, it's tough to just say, well, go get one, right? It's not like teams don't want to go get them, and it's not like it's a magic elixir either. You look at the team on the other side tonight, the New York Islanders. They have a dyed-in-the-wool MVP candidate, first overall big Olympic center. And the New York Islanders are not the envy of all things National Hockey League, and they haven't been for a long time. It's not this magic elixir.
At the same time, how do you get one? Right? You're not remotely in the conversation for a Connor McDavid. And it seems irresponsible to say, hey, we just got to get lucky later in the draft.
Yeah.
Right?
But
and that's why the only thing you can do is start looking at the Eric Staal, Joe Thornton, Paul Stastny type of situation.
Sure you do. And I'm not, if there's no way to sign Paul Stastny, that's just the way it goes. Joe Thornton's been traded. Okay. Jeff Carter's been traded. Mike Richards has been traded. Kyle Turris has even been traded. Kyle Turris steps in. I don't know whether you think Kyle Turris steps in instantly as the 1C for the Toronto Maple
Leafs.
Yeah,
but he's still not that prototypical type of guy that you're talking about.
No, Dallas in the last year is gone, and they'd be the most obvious example. But I agree, other teams would want to emulate that, where you go get Tyler Seguin and Jason Spezza, and you can do it all in two off seasons, and then be excellent down and up the middle for the next several years. That's their plan anyway. But the Leafs aren't alone. They're far from alone. Phoenix thought they had a guy that they could play in that role in Mike Ribeiro. That didn't work out. There are a lot of people who would have screamed for the Leafs to sign Mike Ribeiro a year or two ago. He's hopped around like a grasshopper in the last several years from franchise to franchise.
At the same time, though, when you think of, it's really easy to say, go get Staal or go get Getzlaff. It's not going to be that easy, and you're giving up a major, major package to do so.
You are, but I mentioned 8-9 guys that have moved. Eight or nine that have been able to go somewhere, even if you can't get them in free agency.
Well, you haven't mentioned 8 or 9 guys that have been traded.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I didn't realize we were being exact in terms of numbers.
What big name? Okay, over the last, 15 years?
No, over the last 5 years. Turris, Carter, Richards, the two guys I mentioned in Dallas.
And Turris is, and when we're talking about the Leafs' biggest need for this prototypical A-type, undeniable two-way center, that's not Mike Richards. It's not Kyle Turris.
They're better than the alternative. Let me put you on the spot. Are you looking at the Leafs up and down the middle, up center ice, and saying they're good enough to compete for anything?
I'm not saying that. I've never said that.
Don't even leave it open. Say that they're not.
But I'm saying you have to narrow your focus a little bit, right? You're not just going to go out there and get Ryan Getzlaff. What you need to find is a centerman with some defensive capability. Forget the 80-point in contention Tyler Seguin, Art Ross, and Hart. I'm talking about, looking at something more along the lines of Patrick Berglund, right? A guy that is known more for his defensive chops and isn't a liability offensively. Is this going to mean you have to move off some of your strength, which is a young decor? Maybe. Does it mean you're going to have
almost
to move
definitely
off Nazem Kadri, who, to be honest, is as much as people like to paint him that he has all his defensive potential? I don't think it's going to happen that way.
No.
I think they'd love to move Nazem Kadri if anybody wanted him.
Well, they're not going to give him away for nothing. I do think that there's value that Kadri has at the age of 23, when you're coming off a point per game season when you're 21 and you score 50 points with playing with Joffrey Leupold half the time, and you score 50 points in 78 games. Let's not act like there's not value. There's value for Evander Kane.
I didn't say there wasn't value. It doesn't mean they wouldn't.
You implied no one would want him.
Well, I don't mean for free. I mean, if the Leafs want to get value for Nazem Kadri, nobody's willing to give it up. I think they'd love to move Nazem Kadri for a decent return and rid themselves of the conversation. Not saying it's the right thing. I'm saying that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I agree. The problem is there's Leafs fans, or Leafs observers, if you will, that think more of Kadri maybe than his own management does. Put it that way.
Sure. Yeah, that's very fair.
But so all this comes back to Tavares tonight. And yeah, it's a struggle. It's tough to know the best way to attack a John Tavares. And you need to score goals. I'm inclined to say you're right in that. Don't worry about Bozak scoring. Don't worry about JVR. Don't worry about Kessel. They'll all get their points. But how many are they giving up? If they're giving up more than they're getting, really, at the end of the day, then is that the most ideal scenario to be playing them in every 1C, every first line situation?
Well, and don't forget, the Islanders get the last change tonight. And when the other team dictates what they want to do, you can probably bet that they will try to get the John Tavares line out as much as they can against the Phil Kessel, Tyler Bozak, JVR line. And that kind of speaks, and we'll see how it goes, but it kind of speaks volumes of where that line is defensively, you will take the warts, right? Because that line trading chances is still going to outscore most lines in the National Hockey League, save for a few.
Quick on this, Plekanec is 31, and we've talked about the start he's had for the season and the consistency he's had. You know, always in the 20s with goals scored, always flirting with 60, 70 points. That to me is a sign of being patient with a player as well. Like I said, he's 31, but he has shown a notable consistency. He's always healthy, never seems to be a problem. They always sign him decent money. I don't even know how the Leafs find a player like that to be patient with and stay with. Admittedly, they've done this with Bozak. And had they moved off Bozak and said, we tried it, and a college player, undrafted, didn't work out, and had they moved off him, then they don't have the benefits of him having a good year last year. But the Kadri thing could also backfire in their face, and he could go somewhere else and be even better than he's been here with the right players and with the right scenario.
You make a good point. What I'll say about the Plekanec thing is that's two ways. It's the team having patience, but it's also the player willing to take a step back and say, I'm going to redefine myself. I'm going to be this team first guy. I'm not going to press to go to, I don't know, say Florida and score 85 points a season. I'm okay with being a 50-point guy and playing a defensive role. I think they'd love, because Nazem Kadri it's harder to play offense than it is to play defense. Nazem Kadri is the skill to be that guy, but so far, I don't think he's entirely interested in being a 45 to 50-point guy and making his chops being in competition for the Selke.
And I'm not sure. I'm not sure he's ever going to be able to check. And that's the biggest problem.
6:53. Brady and Walker has mentioned game one World Series tonight, Kansas City and San Francisco. Now in San Francisco, a group of radio stations, or one in particular, has decided to ban a certain song.
Yes.
But they're a little late to the party.
Well, yeah. Me So Horny by Two Live Crew won't be played. You know, I have the wrong song in the wrong year.
That's the wrong song.
I'm looking
at this
thinking, Me So Horny isn't being played regularly. They've banned Lords Royals from a number of San Francisco stations, including KOIT, Better Music for a Better Workday. Who the hell doesn't want both of those things? Better Music for a Better Workday.
Now, obviously, they're banning the song because it's the word Royals is used excessively in it. And obviously, they're playing the Royals. But the good news is, for all of you and for us, is that we banned that song because it's a lousy song. What, 13 months ago? 14 months ago?
Although I did not know. Now, Lord is a New Zealand solo artist, right? She's like 18
or 19. Girl.
Her quote I saw, I had this image. She revealed the inspiration for Royals came from a photograph she saw, and she saw a guy signing baseballs, like one of the Royals players from years ago.
That's not accurate. Not accurate.
That's what she's saying. She's saying she saw a picture of George Brett in an issue of National Geographic. He was one of the rare clothed people in National Geographic when I was a kid.
You're probably out there wondering, why aren't they playing the song? Which song are you talking about? It's banned. We banned it a long time ago, so we won't be playing it.
I think it's only fair to follow suit. These Better Music for a Better Workday has the right idea. Are they taking resumes?
We play a lot of crappy music. Most of it Brady's on the show. We will not be playing Lords Royals today.
Okay. Maybe tomorrow?
6:55, Brady and Walker, 7:02. We're back in on the World Series. What do we expect from Game 1 tonight? It's Shields against Madison Bumgarner.
Can I just get some Maroon 5 a little bit later on?
No.
But maybe?
No, you can't.
That's not... No. I didn't touch anything there. That was not me.
You, your Sarah McLachlan, and your Pina Coladas. I'm sick of it.